What is up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. Drancer will be joining us momentarily here. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. I am live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And you can get your thoughts in. Drancer, of course, is in Edmonton covering this series. As I said, we will connect with him momentarily and get him involved in the show. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. We got a lot to get into today. I was thinking on my way to work, there's an old expression. There are decades where nothing happens, and there are weeks where decades happen. We had a decade where, as far as the NHL playoffs, the Stanley Cup playoffs are concerned, nothing happened. Not much happened for the Vancouver Canucks. And we're making up for lost time over the last week, and especially over the weekend since we last talked on Friday, because there is a lot happening between the Canucks and the Edmonton Oilers. Oh, Drance, we got you?
Oh, sweet.
All right, there he is.
I'm trying to test, but I guess I'm just on air.
You're just on air. Hello.
Glad I didn't test with a dirty joke or something. All right. Goodness.
We'll bring those levels on down for you, so you're not cracking the mic quite so much there. But I'll give you your proper intro. You are, of course, a Canucks insider, also covering the team for The Athletic. What's up, man?
I was on the line for your what's up, so I really enjoyed the energy you brought. I want to note that. What a weekend. What an unbelievable weekend of hockey. We've got so much to discuss, so much controversy, so much, like, bad blood. Like, this is the all-Canadian stuff we wanted. You know, this is what we wanted. This is what we were hoping for. We have got it, and the Canucks have got a 2-1 series lead. They're now favored to win the series. And, I mean, the Oilers have to win 3 of 4 now if they're going to advance. Unbelievable stuff.
Hold on.
In Edmonton but on Sunday night.
Just before we open the whiteboard, I want to run my big brain take off the top here. You've heard the expression, there are decades where nothing happens and there are weeks where decades happen. We're living in that now, right? We had a decade where nothing happened in the Stanley Cup playoffs for the Canucks because they were never there. And we're making up for lost time in a big way over the last week, over the last weekend. We are squishing a decade worth of stuff, of emotion, of events, of controversy into this series against the Oilers. It's fantastic. As you said, so much to discuss. Let's get right into the whiteboard here.
All right, now, fellas, hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, May 13th, starting with the headlines. And, I mean, man, where do we even begin right now? Obviously, we got to start with the state of the series, the result from last night. The Canucks win 4-3, and they take a 2-1 series lead against the Edmonton Oilers. Archer Shelov's third-string goalie, making 42 saves for the Canucks to hold on to a 4-3 win, a pair of goals each from Brock Besser and Elias Lindholm as they get the victory.
Hey, Jamie, maybe we go lightning round headlines.
Yes.
Like, because there's like the Canucks result.
There's like 10 headlines.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So let's go lightning round. Like, that's a headline. Yep. We'll have time to discuss everything. So let's go lightning round headlines.
Yep.
I'll go with Stuart Skinner chased, refuses to speak to media, and the contrast between Shelov's 42 saves and his overall excellence is sharp with the fact that it looks like this is one of those series, as we've talked about. We talked about how if the Canucks were going to win, this needed to be the script. It feels like the Canucks have to work about half as hard as the Oilers to get a goal, and you can tell that that's causing the frustration to mount on the Oilers' side, culminating in Leon Dreisaitl's posts aren't good goaltending, nor are they good shooting, my dynamic sniper friend from Germany. An interesting what?
I thought you were going to call him my dynamic German friend there.
I don't actually know him at all. but seriously, like, that, you know what that comment reminded me of? It reminded me of Bieksa calling Michael Furland Firkland. as the series like went away from the Canucks. Just like a vet who's frustrated and sort of playing down just how impactful, just how in his head Seelovs has become. And I mean, how could that not be the case? He's been the difference in this series.
Okay, as we go lightning round through the headlines, and we can kind of circle back and dig into them as necessary. Let's stick with the game itself for now, just because some of the headlines from the game. The other big one for me is the Oilers pushing the time on ice for McDavid, for Dreisaitl, for basically their top five unit, right, with Hyman out there and then Bouchard and Ekholm, to what you have to think, and I guess Knobloch kind of said as much after the game, is the absolute breaking point for them. And doing so, and yet still ending up falling behind in this second round series as they serve 0-5 on 5 goals last night, despite all the shot attempts, despite all of that time on ice for McDavid and Dreisaitl loaded up on the same line.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one for sure. I'll go with Brock Besser. Scores a fake hat trick. Brock Besser made a real impact, but scored a fake hat trick. You know, I could tell that it was Lindholm's goal in building, but it was announced in building as Besser's goal and officially remained Besser's goal on the NHL score sheet for long enough for that fans, when Besser then scored his first and second goal of the night, traveling Canucks fans at Rogers Place, which, by the way, kudos to you guys, because there was like solidly 24 hats that hit the ice, which is awesome in a road building during the playoffs.
Now, I thought I detected also while we're speaking of fans. And by the way, even on the broadcast, it was like, oh, that was tipped. So it was very odd to me that it took that long for them to change it. You know, Lindholm goes to the bench first. I was a little confused by that. But did I hear a faint mocking Skinner chant from the Canucks fans in the building at some point? Because that sure sounded 100%. Like it. Yeah.
You also had the visiting fans in attendance, you know, be like, let's go Oilers, let's go Oilers, and they'd sneak in a go Canucks go in between each one. I thought it was awesome. Just like a real dueling environment. And frankly, I'd say Canucks fans made a far bigger impact on the environment of that game than visiting Oilers fans did when the series was in Vancouver in games 1 and 2. So once again, doff my cap to those Canucks fans that made the trek to Edmonton, or those, you know, poor expats who happen to be living here. Besser, fake hat trick.
Yep.
He broke that game open, period. Opportunistic, no doubt about it, when he got into space, the way that he got lost off of that brilliant JT Miller cycle shift on the second goal, the way that he just left no doubt after Pugh Suter, my guy, forced that turnover, that really, really laissez-faire Warren Fogle turnover that gave the Canucks a 3-1 lead. They needed every inch of that lead. And you could tell, like, getting an early 2-goal lead, man, that changed the entire game, and Besser was at the center of it. As he's, like, just, it's been a dream season for him anyway, but to then see him elevate his game like this in the postseason, not just as a scorer, but as a defensive player, as a guy who's, you know, like, even his hand eye has just been on point in terms of batting pucks down and being hard to get by and winning battles on the wall. I mean, this guy has gone to a totally different level. You love to see it.
And I think one of the things that's been lost in Brock Besser's evolution as a player, because we haven't had a chance to see it, is his game has kind of developed in a way where he should be a really good playoff player, right? Like the defensive responsibility, the strength along the wall, the details, all of that. It is actually well suited to the playoffs. Deflections. We just haven't had a chance to see it. But man, he looks like a bona fide top line playoff player right now.
Yeah, I mean, I used to compare Brock Besser, I'd say, like, he's right-handed Thomas Tatar, which I meant as a compliment, because Thomas Tatar had, you know, a 6-7 year stretch as a top of the lineup, or at least top six winger. But it feels like he's grafted some Pavelski to his game. Maybe not the full Pavelski, but he's grafted enough Pavelski that, you know, I need to ditch that Tatar comparison. He's way better.
TJ Oshie, a name that's come up a lot as well, right? Like, you know, right-handed, similar size, all that, not necessarily fleet of foot, but the puck skills. But yeah, it's an impressive,
polite way of putting it.
Hey, what do you want me to say?
Do you remember the play in DC in the 1920 season? You'll actually remember this. I know it sounds esoteric, but Quinn Hughes caught TJ Oshie on the breakaway because JT Miller pushed him in the butt with his stick.
Yes.
And it was like a perfect, a perfect fall that allowed Quinn Hughes to intercept the breakaway.
Yeah.
And I remember I turned to Tariq Al-Bashar, the excellent Washington Capitals beat writer, and I was like, wow, can you believe he caught Oshie? And Tark's just like, everyone catches
yes,
Oshie.
I can believe it.
I was so unimpressed.
I can believe it quite easily, in fact, that he caught TJ Oshie there. Okay. is Lindholm a headline as well? Two goals?
Absolutely.
Absolutely he is, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I thought there were real questions. I had real questions about Lindholm's fit with Joshua and Garland. I'd say I kind of still do, just given the way that that line hasn't driven play the same way.
Mm-hmm.
But there is no debating two things about three things about Lindholm's game. One, that shift right off the hop where they whacked yep. Matthias Ekholm twice, him and Joshua, and then Garland managed to get a bunch of sort of snide off to the side, perfectly hewing the line between what's permissible and what's not, shots in at Connor McDavid on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
That set the whole tone. Like, by the time they were done that 20-second shift, it wasn't a long shift, and the Canucks quick-changed them to get the Miller line out against McDavid. But the once that 20-second shift was done, that building was 25% quieter, and even though Edmonton scored the first goal, that shift set the tone for what was a focused performance from the Canucks coming out of Game 3 with a win. Secondly, he scores two goals on the power play and obviously crushed it in the draw.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what we were talking about when the Canucks acquired Lindholm. Because you'll remember, I was a little bit skeptical about Lindholm being like the five-on-five offensive player that he'd been in the past. But the thing that we kept hitting really hard when the Canucks acquired him was the hockey fit. The right-handed draw. The fact that he can pitch on the power play. The fact that he would instantly be Vancouver's best penalty-killing forward.
Yep.
You know, just the fit. The hockey fit made so much sense, even if there was some skepticism about his five-on-five game. And I think we've seen that. Not only has he been coming up big in key moments for this team all playoffs long, but even where, you know, some of like the play with the puck has left you wanting, he's still provided so much value because that hockey fit is so evident, so obvious. Rick Tocchet talking about it post-game that, you know, just throwing him out for draws and the way that he deals with that wear and tear and really how he seems to be one of the few guys on the bench that can do it at a certain level. It's a very high level. He's been massive. And then the third thing, Canucks acquired Lindholm ahead of the deadline. Oilers acquired three guys who were not in the lineup last night.
Yep.
In a one goal game decided by fine margins. Like, man, couldn't the Oilers have used like an additional top four right-handed defenseman or an additional impact forward as opposed to what they actually got, paying up a first round pick to get Henrique and Carrick and an additional pick to get Stetcher. I mean, I don't think it's
Nikita Zadorov, right? Now he's not right-handed, but still, like, look at the impact he's having. Now I understand with both Tanev and Zadorov, do you have to pay the Oilers tax going to get them from Calgary? Maybe you do, but like don't you have to do that?
But at least in Tanev's case, I mean, Zadorov, you know, a little bit of a different instance, but at least in Tanev's case, like the Oilers tax was a first.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone who didn't pay a first for Chris Tanev should be regretting it given what he's done in the playoffs, to be totally honest with you. And by the way, that includes the Canucks, although they'd already parted with a first. So
yeah,
at least I understand.
Okay, that's Elias Lindholm. Now to some of the extracurriculars, off-ice stuff. Well, it happened just after the whistle, but Carson Soucy is going to have a phone hearing today with the Department of Player Safety for the cross-check to Connor McDavid that ended up catching McDavid in the face just after the final whistle yesterday. Zadorov has already been fined $5,000, the maximum allowable, of course, under the CBA for his role in that. And it is kind of Zadorov driving McDavid down that ends up, you know, pushing McDavid's face into Carson Soucy's cross-check. Now, I know there's going to be, like, we can talk about the refereeing conversation and all of that. Seems very likely to me that Carson Soucy gets a game. I'd be surprised if it's more than a game. I'd be surprised if he doesn't get a game. I think we're looking at a game for Carson Soucy. Man, that's tough.
I would steal yourself for more than a game. Now, but I agree with you. Like, one would be my, if we were to handicap it, I'd say one is like minus, you know, 200
yep.
at this point, like a pretty heavy favorite. But I would say like plus 150 for two, you know, and then like plus 800 for zero
anything else.
Because I've never seen a guy get a hearing and not get a suspension.
Yeah.
And plus 2,000 for more than two. That's probably wrong. It's probably like plus 350 for more than two. I'd say zero is less likely than more than two. So, shocker to everybody, if you want to be fed red meat about missed calls that have gone against the Canucks or the fact that McDavid's, if you want false equivalence that McDavid slashing Soucy in the shin pad is in any way equivalent to getting forechecked in the face, like, you're listening to the wrong program. Like, I'm not pandering you like that. I'm not feeding you red meat. And I would be skeptical of anyone that is. I went to bed last night pretty confident that it was kind of a nothing burger, that it was kind of a scrum.
Mm-hmm.
And then I woke up to the news that there was a hearing. And so you can go check my Twitter feed. But what I did is I went and I watched every cross-checking suspension from the last 3 years and compiled the video. And look, we've talked about this many times before on the show. Cross-checks to the face, right? A stick to the head, a stick above the shoulders, is something the NHL tends to come down on pretty consistently. For obvious reasons, including the fact that there's like legal precedents, especially in Canadian jurisdictions, about sort of the importance of not permitting that to pass without penalty. I'd add this, like, to me, it's so clear watching the video that Soucy is trying to hit him in the chest. Yep. like he'd already done. And the reason that he makes contact with his head is the context of Zadorov cross-checking him in the back. That said, I wouldn't have cross-checked him in the face if not for my teammate cross-checking him in the back. It's not like the best defense. There's also this. A player changing body position immediately prior to contact is used and considered as mitigating circumstances by the NHL in instances of like hits from behind, boarding, and Rule 48 violations in particular, right? But there is also an established standard that you have to be more responsible for your stick in some ways than you do for your body, given the fact that there's like automatic penalties for high stick. Mm-hmm. Insert a chorus of Canucks fans being like, oh, is there? I didn't notice that in game two when Quinn Hughes took a stick to the face from McDavid. And fair enough, that was a missed call, but has nothing to do with this specific sequence. On the other hand, and this would be something that I think the Canucks should discuss at length in defending Soucy at the hearing, you know, the one area where, you know, a high stick's not like the player's not necessarily responsible for making contact with an opponent with a high stick would be if the player's like lying on the ice, like if they're below normal shoulder level, that does change the standard. That would be something that the Canucks could try and extrapolate into a principle. But good luck with that. I don't think that's going to hold water. It's still something you should try. Anyway, I bring all this up to say that, you know, in a variety of the 8 or 9 cross-checking suspensions we've seen across the last 3 seasons, like very frequently you have one player slash another player and the other player respond in a retaliatory way. Mm-hmm. It's not that they necessarily started the engagement, but you can't cross-check a guy in the face. And the result in this instance does tend to matter more than intent because, A, you have to protect players' heads or you have to protect them from damage to the head as a result of high sticking contact with the stick above the shoulders or in an adjacent area that endangers the head. And so, yeah, I went to bed thinking that this was nothing. I woke up, looked into it a little bit more, and I can understand why all the national media who deal more with suspensions than we do think about these things a little more than we do. I can understand why they all knew pretty much right away that this was going to be a problem for Soucy, especially given that it occurs outside the run of play, which is where most of the harshest cross-checking suspensions have occurred.
So I think because it's after the final whistle, right? And as you said, cross-check to the face kind of almost automatically triggers this type of review. To me,
yeah,
that gets you to a game minimum. But I understand what you're saying about intent, but intent does matter in some regards because obviously intentionally cross-checking somebody in the face is much worse, right, than accidentally cross-checking someone,
yes,
in the face. Now, I'm not saying that I'm not saying that absolves you, but to me, that's what limits it to a game, right? Is like, okay, you have to be punished, but we also know it wasn't intentional. Now, look, maybe it's two.
I hope
that seems harsh for the playoffs.
I agree with you. And, you know, Carson Soucy, we've watched him play a lot. Like, this is not a dirty,
yeah,
player, right? Like, more than not a dirty player, Carson Soucy's a gentleman. You know, like, but, you know, does intent factor when it's contact to the face with a stick, because it doesn't in high sticking penalties. Like, I've never seen that be factored in. You know, it was used to somewhat mitigate the circumstances of the Mangiapane one,
mm-hmm.
but even then, he still ended up getting a game, and that was with a player on the ice.
So the way I think of it is not so much that it mitigates it, but that the presence of intent would exacerbate the penalty. You know what I mean?
Like, oh, yeah,
that,
sure.
That, and so it's kind of two sides of the same coin, but if there was clear, like, I am going to nail you in the face with my stick, then you're talking about clearly more of in a game. Without that, I think you're still probably in that game range, but we'll see. And obviously we'll have it instantly if the decision comes down while we're on the air, and we'll get into it.
It just sucks because it's so clearly accidental on Susie's end.
Yep.
Like, it's just a bad scene.
Yep. It's unfortunate. But we'll see. We'll see what the result is. And obviously, Noah Juulsen prime to potentially draw into the lineup here. Okay, last headline quickly. We got to mention it. Over the weekend, frenemy of the show, Mark Spector, throwing some gasoline on the fire here and accusing the Canucks of institutional surrender. The buzz phrase or the buzzword coming out of that column for generally complaining about the referees. We can park some time to talk about this one. And by the way, Mark Spector is going to join us now. It's not going to be all relitigating the column. Don't worry. We'll talk about it. But there's a lot to get into from the game last night as well. But we were expecting a very, let's say, heated social media environment in this series, Drance. I wasn't quite expecting Spector to, like, grab a bunch of pallets, build a big bonfire, throw some kerosene on it, and then throw the match quite so gleefully and quickly as he did with that column.
I mean, it was definitely a stakes raiser.
Hey, maybe that was my bad.
Yeah, it was definitely a stakes raiser. No question about that. And yeah, I mean, we'll chat with him a little bit about it. But, you know, I we're not having Spector on to egg him for this one. I'm just fair warning. We'll talk about it. But yeah, the institutional surrender.
Hey,
I mean, come on.
Look, the team that Spec covers has way bigger problems than what he wrote in that column right now. So we're going to spend a lot of time talking about what ails the Oilers with Spec, more so than just
his
column.
They are vulnerable.
Yeah. Okay, we'll skip over the broadsheet today. Lineup notes. The Canucks are practicing in Edmonton, I think, in about an hour's time here. So I think it's an optional practice, so we might not get too much news there. But we should mention Linus Karlsson and Nils Åman drawing in place of Nils Höglander and Phil DiGiuseppe last night and performing admirably. I mean, Linus Karlsson's out there. Yeah, granted, it's a two-goal game at the time, and then they get scored on. But, like, he's out there in the final minutes of a playoff game, which is pretty surprising. But I thought he did
he played his job really well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought he played really well. He was a handful. He was a handful for the Oilers, and probably the most noticeable player on a line that mostly did nothing. So, Linus Karlsson really, really good. And then Nils Åman had a shorthanded scoring chance.
Yep.
So, not bad.
That's about all
Thrown
you can
in
ask
against
for.
That Oilers power play. And he did his job. I mean, great stuff from Vancouver's depth contributors.
Playoff forecast. Dom's model now has this as a straight 50-50 coin flip, pure coin flip to go either way with the previously underdog Canucks with a 2-1 lead, having won on the road in Edmonton. Gambling update for us there, Drancer.
Gambling odds match that. Oilers are minus 115. Sorry, let me make sure that I've got that right. It's not quite a pick 'em. The Oilers are minus 115 and the Canucks are minus 105 to advance. So, sorry, I said the Canucks were favored, but that's not quite right. It's not quite a pick 'em. Oilers implied probability of advancing is at about 53%, Canucks at 51%. Wire thin margins between teams after three games, contrary to the expectations of the gambling markets coming in.
Yeah, and 3-1 goal games, right? So you can understand why this one is still razor thin right now going into the final four games.
Although I do want to note, I wouldn't typically consider last night to have been a one-goal game because the Oilers got a 6-on-5
That's
goal.
Fair. That's fair, right? So it was...
For me anyway, the Canucks pulled off their first clear victory of the playoffs in Game 3 in Edmonton on Sunday night. Feels good! Feels pretty good.
That is the whiteboard for today with the Canucks taking a 2-1 series lead. Gemma Karsten-Smith from the Canadian Press, she's there on the ground in Edmonton covering the series. She will join us next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.